Our final talk this morning is the National Cancer Institute Community Network Program's Innovative Approaches to Reducing Cancer Health Disparities from John Foster Bay.
Thank you. And before we get started, I just want to acknowledge some of the people who've also worked on this, working on this project and worked on this presentation. To my research assistants, Tiffany Jeffries and Craig Deerfield, and my colleagues and funders and supporters from NCI, Emmanuel Taylor, Kenneth Cho, and Leslie Cooper. Let me just say a little bit about the Community Networks program initiative. The CNP is a five-year initiative that's funded by NCI's Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities. There are 25 recipients of the funding. The purpose of the initiative is to test the efficacy of community-based participatory research as a model for reducing cancer disparities. Each of the sites focuses on one or more demographic groups that are at risk of experiencing disparities in either the diagnosis and treatment of cancer. My role in this is I'm part of the national evaluation team, which is being done by CSR Incorporated. We're based in Arlington, Virginia. And the evaluation itself is using a mixed method approach. It's a five-year evaluation that actually started with the beginning of the actual initiative. We're now moving into the fourth year of that evaluation. We're looking at quantitative data that helps us look at outcome analysis. We also are doing qualitative methods as well, including site visits and document reviews. The presentation that I'm going to give you today is really going to focus on a couple of our site visits, where we tried to have a little more in-depth analysis of what was happening at a couple of the sites that we thought were representative of the project as a whole. Before I get started talking about that, I just want to say a couple of words about the how we think about the community-based participatory research model. And obviously, I think most of you are familiar with it, but just the basic assumption of that model is that the model assumes that experts don't always understand the problems and the best solutions for communities. And so an important part of that model is that experts, researchers, others have to work in collaboration and really in partnership with communities. The model itself should move from working with communities and identifying problems, designing and implementing solutions. And the NCI model, the CNP model that we're going to talk about, moves from this idea of a partnership formation, building capacity of each of the projects to engage in this community-based process, and then moves to designing and implementing interventions. So let me see if I get this right. Okay. Let me just say a little bit of background about the site visits themselves. We did the site visits in the first quarter of 2008, and we identified three of our grantees, three of the 25. These grantees, we felt were representative. They represented either grantees with a national focus or a regional focus. They were grantees that had been reporting on activities in both what we call a phase one and phase two. Phase one is the partnership and community capacity building process, and phase two was the beginning of gathering data on outcomes. The three sites that we visited, these are the three sites we visited, and they're scattered across the country. We have one site's on the West Coast in Seattle, others in Baltimore, Maryland, and the other is in San Antonio, Texas. Let me start off by talking about what each of the sites talked about in terms of the lessons they learned in three areas. Lessons they learned around forming community partnerships, lessons around planning for disparity reduction activities, and lessons around implementing new programs and interventions. starting off with forming community partnerships. The first big lesson they learned was that in disadvantaged communities, there's a big issue of trust. And so when experts go in and researchers go in, those communities have often are suspicious of the motives of a lot of the folks who come in to work with them. So a couple of the big issues you have to begin to work on is how do you overcome this trust issue? And how do you? What are some of the things you have to do to help communities become more open to you? And one of the things that the sites talked about was that you really have to work on sharing the motivations of the researchers and the health experts, and also opening yourself up to let the community know about your own vulnerabilities and some of your own concerns. The second major lesson, which grows right out of that trust issue, was that building these partnerships is not something that you can kind of parachute in and do very quickly. It takes a very long time. Even though we talk about this project as going through phases, the trust building process is ongoing. You can't say, okay, in a few months we'll have the trust process completed and then we'll move to the intervention. No, that's a process that you have to keep going on over and over again. Just for example, it's very important to understand cultural differences and be sensitive to those differences. Just one example we have here is that one of the partners talked about finding out that it was a lot easier to communicate and share information in a Native American community by telling stories rather than distributing brochures, which is kind of one of the more traditional ways that people think about in sharing information. Let's talk a little bit about the lessons that they talked about at the sites about around planning disparity reduction activity. First, it was crucial to work with the communities themselves to identify their needs. So one of the things that the projects had to be careful of was that they weren't coming in with their own idea about what the communities needed. They had to actually spend the time and really understand how the communities looked at their own issues. So even though all the data might say, you know, we really have to work on smoking cessation, unless the communities themselves were identifying that limited their ability to be successful. They also had to make sure that through this whole process that they continued to receive guidance, and I would say even more than just guidance. I mean, strong participation from the community in assessing the needs and then moving from the assessing of those needs to designing and implementing effective responses. It's important that each of those communities that they select the responses to those needs. And again, it's not just the researchers or experts. And one final thing that we actually thought was kind of interesting. The attitudes of the staff themselves, the people involved, the experts, were actually very important. So, sort of an arm's length, very objective approach wasn't always productive. In many ways, the community folks wanted to see an enthusiastic kind of engagement and participation on the part of the experts and the researchers. The last set of lessons were around strategies for actually implementing intervention. And again, the activities, and you'll see a kind of a constant theme here, the activities needed to be informed by previous research on the community's needs and how they saw their barriers to obtaining services. And here again, basically what that just means is in order to come up with a strategy or an implementation strategy around an intervention, that intervention needs to be seen from the standpoint of the community as coming from their perceptions and their needs, and not simply being something that the expert has come in with and said this is the best thing to do. Finally, there needs to be a strong collaboration process with the community partners in the development of the final strategies and the final interventions. And let's talk a little bit about some of the selected findings. Part of the model that, in the capacity building stage of this model, is that the various sites have to begin to pull together partnerships with clinical partners and non-clinical partners. And they do that in a variety of ways. This chart shows a sort of a intensity of formality, if you will, around partnership formation. The most formal partnership structure is the use of a memorandum of understanding, and it goes all the way down to having no agreement at all. And as you can see, there's a fair amount of variation in terms of how different groups use the more formality or more formal partnership agreements. As you can see, for example, that one of the groups with their partners, they use over 80% of their agreements are all very formal memorandums of understanding. For non-clinical agreements and partners, you see a very similar you see similar results. You actually see slight differences in who actually uses the more formal partnership structures. Man, 2 minutes. Let me just quickly go through this then. Just a couple of results, some additional results around needs assessments. Across the three sites that we looked at, there were 40 needs assessments conducted. That gives a distribution of those assessments. The most frequently cited needs were culturally specific information services, language specific services, and just general information and education. This is a chart, and I hope you can see it, that lays out the topics of the needs assessments that were done. As you can see, the area that was most frequently focused on was just a general needs assessment, and that just simply means that the sites went into the communities without any particular preconception of what they wanted to test, and they just asked for they put together a research study that tried to surface the most important issues from the community. The others were more focused on specific issues that had surfaced through some other process, and they wanted to test whether those were really important in the community. Quickly, some program successes. I've got the 1 minute mark, so I've got to go a little bit quicker. But these are just some examples of some of the things that the site said that they thought were innovative practices that were coming out of their work. Some talked about developing a mini medical school, the bilingual education projects and products such as magazines and training manuals, health fairs, using radio announcements to reach different groups in specific language. They talked a lot about how they were able to improve their own focus on primary prevention. There was the use of interactive web zines and the use of the web to reach some of the groups they wanted to target. I'll go on. Some other examples, I won't go through all of them. Just a couple of words about the community's response. The PIs at each of the sites really believe that active community participation in guiding and implementing program activities was critical to success, and that they were getting that kind of response from their communities, that the programs had to be designed, again, to address the community's needs rather than to address what the researchers thought were most important. Staff members also needed to really focus and continue to work on building trust, that the high level of trust makes it easier for existing clients to and program participants to refer new participants to the CNP programs and interventions, that it was important to have a high level of cultural sensitivity. And just a couple of examples, one CNP was able to conduct a second clinical trial because of the response from participants in their first clinical trial. One of their clients just said that the CNP patient navigation system saved her life because it helped her understand her treatment. And I'll leave it there. We have more, give it a time. Thank you.
I want to thank each of our presenters for sticking to the times assigned in the program. It gives us time for discussion. So are there questions? Yes.